Thank you. It's really an honor to be here. And I was overwhelmed yesterday. I had never been to the Dickinson College campus before and had no idea how well-designed and well-run the college farm is out there. And it was a good source of inspiration for me and what we're trying to do at Mercyhurst College. But I was exhausted after being out there. I don't know if anybody else felt physically tired last night, because I think fully appreciating how much labor goes into what they're doing out there, I think I had psychological tiredness. I wasn't able to stay for the hoedown last night. I'm hoping it was fun. The first thing I want to say, in case there is anyone in this room who is coming to get ideas and considering doing some college garden or trying to get a farm operation going as a learning entity, do not try this unless you have a president that embraces the idea of sustainable agriculture. If you don't have leadership at the top that gets it, you're just going to shoot yourself in the foot right at the beginning. And I was really impressed with the president that spoke at the dinner last night, and I can understand better why Dickinson has gone as far as they have already, because they've got a president who looks like he was a farmer. So that's perfect. Second thing, don't do this unless you have a creative and sociable garden farm manager who is rewarded by the livelihood of producing food. I heard this from folks at Penn State and a former student who runs a research farm at Michigan State, that one of the really key things that you're going to need if you're going to have any success is a full-time employee that gets it and that has a green thumb and is also good with people. And Dickinson is blessed with a pair of such people in Jen and Matt, which are doing an amazing job here. And the being rewarded by the livelihood of producing food is critical, because you may find that your college or university administrators aren't going to want to pay a decent salary for someone who's a farmer. And that's unfortunate, but we do have a lot of folks in our society that, and in our academic institutions, that if somebody doesn't have a college degree or doesn't have a PhD, then they might not be worth the salary that maybe they deserve. So you've got to have somebody that's willing to work for less than what college faculty get. You have to be good at managing paperwork or have someone on staff that is. I'm terrible at paperwork. And thank goodness I have friends and former students that work for our sustainability program and at the facility where we have the farm, that are very good at helping to do a lot of the administrative aspects that I stink at. You've got to have committed and interested colleagues and students that share your vision. You're not going to be able to do this alone. Look around your department, look around other departments, find people on campus that get it and are willing to work with you in advancing it, and that is going to be critical. It helps if you were single or at least have a spouse that understands your work obsession, because anybody who's ever done gardening or farming knows how much work it takes, and you're going to be unhappy if you have a spouse that doesn't get it. It helps if you're a faculty member, if you're already tenured and have achieved full rank, because take it from me, once you start this, you're not going to be very productive in terms of scholarly research. And honestly, once you get your hands in the dirt and get away from hardcore research, you never want to go back to that other life. And that's where I'm at. I kind of took this on as I was reaching the sunset of my career, and I decided that I'm going to do something different now that I've gotten where I need to be. And I think it's going to be a very satisfying way to kill myself. Here's our situation. We are located in the southern Great Lakes, where Pennsylvania is a little tiny corner on the Great Lakes, Erie, PA, which of course everyone associates with this scene, which was not photographed taken at the edge of the Arctic Ocean, but this is the edge of Lake Erie a couple of days before my birthday, in February of 2010. I was working in Central Texas when a job opening came up in Erie, Pennsylvania, and the people in Texas thought I was insane because everything they had always heard about Erie was that, you know, just god-awful snowfall. That is true. The lake definitely affects the local climate for growing, and that, if nothing else, actually enhances the challenge of actually trying to produce food and advancing crazy objectives like year-round food production. Our campus is located in the city of Erie, in an urban area, and is pretty well fully developed, although it's kind of at the edge of town and we're in sort of like a suburban type neighborhood. Our farm and the garden, which we've begun to work on, is located in a small town about 15 miles outside of the city, but it's in sort of the garden district of the county. And the lake plain, which thousands of years ago was where the lake used to be, has wonderful soil. We have a lot of prime farmland soil in Erie County. Most of the eastern portion of the county, from the city over towards New York, is vineyards, a wonderful area for growing grapes because the lake gives us a sort of extended season protected from frost in the autumn. And most of the western part of the county is sort of the garden district, and close to 10,000 acres operated by an evergreen nursery company, a wholesale evergreen nursery company. So a lot of perennial production in the western part of the county. The bad thing about where our farm and garden is a 25-minute drive to get there. I'm jealous of Green Mountain College with their farm right next door. Really wish if I could do this all over again that it wouldn't have been so far away. But man, if you have any choice on where you're going to do it as close as possible to where you are with all of your students. That this frustration after 3 years has prompted me to get a garden initiative going right on campus, and I'll share it with you a little image of that. So now we're kind of trying to do student garden initiatives on both campuses. I try to think about what we're doing and why we're doing it about a year and a half ago, because I had to give a presentation on this to the Board of Trustees because they wanted to know why they were spending money on a garden project. And these were the objectives I presented to the board, and when I looked at them last week, I thought, okay, these are still good. We want to demonstrate sustainable land use principles, and our vision and our hope is that we can, at some point, show year-round food production, focusing on using most of the food that we grow for the local community and by the college. We want to utilize the gardening and food production facilities to strengthen programs that we already have, and also to cultivate new academic opportunities. And I think one of the most important things is to utilize what we're doing in the garden to do more in the community, to broaden our connections into the community, and do as much outreach as we can with it. Here's the layout of the farm. It's at the edge of the town. Actually, portions of this are in the borough of this small town, about 3,000 people, and other portions of it are in the township. This beautiful patch of forest right here is kind of right on the boundary between the borough and the township. This whole farm had once been a seminary operation. There basically was a large school there, and it was a private school. And they operated the farm as sort of a self-sufficient community. So they had a small dairy herd and orchards, and they grew their own crops there. So it's kind of neat to have that history of a self-sustaining operation on this property. It's a total of 405 acres, 260 of which is leased to a local grower who's also got a farm right across the street here on the other side of Route 20, and he has been using this for decades, using conventional methods, growing mostly field corn, sweet corn, cabbage, and tomatoes, occasionally a few other vegetables thrown in. We've maintained that lease, and with the farmer's help, I rode around in his pickup truck one day, and we talked about where we could start our garden, and he kind of directed me to this far corner, which was about a 14.5-acre piece, that he thought would be a good place for us to start because the soil was relatively sandy, and he had had good luck growing tomatoes there over the years. So that's where we started our operation. But we really started from scratch. I mean, really scratch. We had no buildings, no water, no electricity. Even the road was bad. I took out the shocks on one of my cars going in and out of this garden the first summer there. Another neat thing about that location, which was just luck, we have a neighbor who already has an organic growing operation, although he sort of backed off trying to make a living selling his organic produce because the local market isn't really interested in paying the premium for organic. His day job is now running a landscape maintenance and contracting business. But he's been hauling all of the landscape trimmings and grass clippings and leaves from his work back to his farm, and has had a huge, giant pile of compost that we were able to utilize. And we've been slowly purchasing all of his compost over the last 3 years to use as an amendment. This is what our operation looked like year one. Just a narrow strip along the edge of the 14.5-acre piece, and piles of compost that we had purchased from our neighbor that we spread. We made lots and lots of mistakes. My very first mistake was in assuming that the little stream that I saw in February, right at the edge of the property, for irrigation, but it turns out that it dries up in the summer, and so we didn't really have even a source of surface water, and so we had to kind of try to capture some rainwater to use for watering seedlings. We planted directly in the compost, which I don't know if anyone intelligent would have actually recommended that, but it was the easiest thing to do, lacking any equipment. Yeah, we didn't even have a tractor or a rototiller to use, so we just spread it out on the surface from the back of a pickup truck and planted right in the compost. And that turned out to be pretty lucky, you know, because the compost was of good quality, and we grew just amazing potatoes and tomatoes and green beans and peas that tasted delicious. We ended up having a fairly decent crop of all of those things that we were able to make available to our campus food service and also at a local farmer's market. So that was a lucky result. We found out that you can just plant right in the compost, and of course the following year we did a little bit more with it to mix it into the soil. But just to kind of give you the story step by step, in the summer of 2009 when we began, we just had that little area striped in yellow there as our intensive production area. And then the other thing we did is we started right off of that a research plot at sort of the crest set up a randomized blocks design to evaluate a little bit more seriously what was going on with our growing methods. We took baseline soil samples and characterized the biology and the chemistry of the soils, and then began a multi-year process of using consistently the compost and biochar and cover crops in consistent ways to see how the soil was going to change. Keep in mind that this soil had been pretty well depleted by probably 150 years of conventional agriculture, and there was virtually no organic matter in it and very little life. So we were really starting from scratch in terms of the soil quality too. In the fall of that year, we purchased 10 sacks of clover and oat seed from Ernst Conservation Seeds in Meadville and put a cover crop over as much of the area that we anticipated gardening in the future. And also built a greenhouse. The Hospitality Management Program had some money left over in their budget that they needed to spend before the end of the budget year, so we put up a little greenhouse, and they also provided the funds to stock it with herbs and spices. We also decided to deal with our water issue, and we built the greenhouse in a way that we could collect rainwater and snow melt from it to fill a cistern, which gives us all the water we need for watering our seedlings. The second year, we approximately doubled the area in intensive production and gave it a more regular shape to make it easier to work in and out of the fields and organize the planting areas. Added several additional annual crops and snagged some honeybees to start our own beehive colony. Planted a great big field of sunflowers just because we knew it would look cool from the highway for people driving by. And then this year, we again doubled the area in intensive production, and I'm trying to get the garden manager to convert from annuals to perennials, where we're trying to plant more and more perennial materials, because I realize that it's a lot less work with perennials than it is with annuals. And we've started some new research areas. We've actually expanded way back beyond this area inscribed in yellow, and we're kind of heading towards the lake now. This farm is huge. It's almost a mile across. So we've got so much space, it's overwhelming to think what we could do. The most important person there is our garden manager, Mr. Timothy Boucher, who has no college degree, but I think is smarter than anybody I know. I'm convinced that a college degree does not make us necessarily, that can't be right. 1 minute?
Yeah, we're usually. We had to hold 10:30.
Oh.
You just scared the hell out of me. That's all right. Yeah, give me another 20 minutes. Okay. Then hold that sign up again.
So, Mike, how much?
I want to allow 10 minutes for Q&A, okay. So that's why my goal is to be done here in 20 minutes. That's okay. So this is Tim. Tim and I don't agree on everything. We have arguments all the time, and I think that's healthy too. I think my wife and I have had, you know, arguments every day for the 33 years we've been married. We're still together, so Tim and I are like, you know, old husband and wife, I guess. He had been working for our maintenance department as, at one time he had been part of the groundskeeping crew, but he couldn't stand it because the head of the groundskeeping crew was someone with a college degree that had their own ideas about how to do things, and Tim and this person didn't get along, so he ended up working as the trash collector on campus. And when he found out that I was interested in gardening and farming, he started to come into my office every day, and he would sit there and talk to me, and I realized this guy had the same vision I did, and he also had the hand on ability to do it because he had grown up on a farm. So Tim and I sort of crafted together the idea of how we would utilize the farm out there, and then I managed to talk the administration into hiring him as our full-time garden manager, and things have taken off since then. I call him the mastermind of sustainable garden innovations here. He knows and practices companion planting and has done a beautiful job of demonstrating some companions on our garden in our intensive production area. We've got peas, cucumbers, and lettuce being grown together. And of course, these are things that conventional farmers could never do because you can only set this up if you're planting by hand and harvesting by hand. Since he was well connected with the campus maintenance crew, we kind of made a deal where we would collect the grass clippings that on main campus were just being thrown in the dumpster to go to the landfill, and started using them as a cover to suppress weed growth between the rows. This is the drainage system he built around our greenhouse for collecting rainwater and all of the snow melt. And we also dug a great big hole with the help of a guy with a backhoe and lined it with plastic and constructed a roof for it. And we now have a 2,500-gallon cistern for watering that has just been amazing. And it's nice to be able to kind of utilize the water that otherwise would have just been running off or causing some erosion. We're on enough of a slope here that we do have the erosion problems with runoff, which means we have to be really careful about how we set up our rows. And this is what it looks like in January out there, where we've been growing some winter vegetables, herbs, spinach, collards, radishes, carrots. Just last week, I started setting up my flats for what we're going to be growing in the winter. We've got four new high tunnels that we just put plastic on this fall with students, and so we're going to be trying to expand our winter production this year. He built a cold frame right next to the biology department on main campus so that we can do some of our seedling startups in the spring and now in the fall, right close to home there, where we can get at it to water them. And I hated Brussels sprouts when I was a kid. And Brussels sprouts are amazing. That we had a row of Brussels sprouts that we let stand all winter, and the Brussels sprouts were perfect, well-preserved, ready to eat still in the spring. As the snow was melting, we were harvesting our Brussels sprouts from the previous year. A great winter crop that you don't even have to protect. We've got a new opportunity with a large solar panel system that had been on main campus, but had to be taken down because a new academic building is going in the place where the solar panels had been. So I talked the college into letting me move them out to the gardens. So we're going to be setting up the solar panel system and actually have electricity. We're getting a grid tie installed using money that was a gift to the garden operation from folks in the community. So we're going to have some electricity. Our food production and marketing with the gardening includes delivering produce to the campus food service. We have Parkhurst as our food service, and they've been great. They embrace the idea of using local food, and our contract with them requires that they use a significant percentage of local food. We also sell our produce at two local farmers markets, one in town, right at the corner of campus that students help with, and one in the little town of Girard, where our farm is. And it's been great. The farmers markets have been wonderful ways to connect with the community. We also, as of this year, have some direct sales to a few local restaurants. And we donate our unsold produce weekly to the food bank in the area. And last year it was about 2 tons. This year it was nearly 5 tons that we've donated to the local food bank. And they just love when we come because they open up their big doors and we back the van in, and they apparently within 24 hours, it's all gone. People, of course, make this all happen. I think the most important thing we cultivate in our farm and garden operation are people, not food and plants. And this was the work crew that was with me the very first summer. This young man right here was a grad student in Intel from Brazil. And I credit him with making all of this happen. In the winter before we started our garden, he had been coming to visit me in my office every day, and he had on his heart that the world was a mess and we needed to try to develop communities in a more sustainable way. So he was the one that pushed me over the edge, and it followed at the end of February during our break. He and I one day decided we were going to try to have a local lunch. We were going to have lunch together, but the only thing that we would eat would be something that came from the local community. And in February in Erie, you don't find much local food. We went to the Whole Foods Co-op, and they had all kinds of good stuff, but it was from Paraguay and California and Florida and Texas, and so we didn't get anything to eat there. We went to a large grocery store that brings in kind of wholesale produce, but again, they didn't have anything that was from within even 100 miles of Erie. And then the last place, it occurred to me that there was a little outlet where the very last commercial fisherman in Erie sells the fish that he gets from Lake Erie. He only had one fisherman left. And the only thing he had on hand was smoked whitefish. So that was our lunch. We shared smoked whitefish. And we realized how pathetic our community would be if we didn't have the ability to transport food in over great distances. And that was when he and I decided we were going to make this garden project work. And from there, I had to include this photograph. These three young ladies are my daughters. And if you recognize the plants around them, this is a Three Sisters garden. So this is a Three Sisters photograph. These are the Three Sisters. All three of my daughters have worked at the garden. Maggie, the one in the center, is the corn. Emily, the one on the right, is the bean. She's an artist, and she needs a lot of help to grow. And one on the left is the squash, and she's a psychology and nursing double major at Penn State. But the three sisters, it helps. This young lady back here is the daughter of the president of the college. It helps if the president's wife and daughter are really into sustainable food systems and organic. And so we've had the president's daughter working on our farm. Lots of students in the summer months, like at Green Mountain College, we get work study funds to help support students working with the garden manager during the summer, and have anywhere from 4 to 5 students on any given day out at the farm helping Tim. Also, students as part of classes. I teach a summer class, and we get, I always build in service hour requirements in my classes, and that gives students the motivation to want to do something. And I'm convinced that when students that have never had any gardening or farming experience get their hands dirty, I mean literally get their hands dirty, it's transformative. If they're out there enough, you know, a lot of the students that come out and work half a day end up wanting to come out more because it's there's something therapeutic in that process. A lot of the students have been biology majors. A lot of kids in transition, you know, lost souls, students that don't know what they want to do with themselves, come work for us for a few months, and they find themselves when they're working out in the fields, and they go on to become other things, but I think the garden work is in their hearts afterwards, and it affects them. This young lady is one that makes me really proud. She's a hospitality manager. Her profession will be probably running a hotel or a restaurant someday. And we gave her this giant field and said, do whatever you want. And she planted pumpkins and gourds, and this was a photograph of just half of what came out of the field that she planted out there. And I think that it's important that we connect whatever we do in these projects to our food service people and to get chefs involved and people that are going to be running restaurants, because I think that they know where the food's coming from, and they're more likely to perhaps at some point grow their own stuff too, which is sustainable. Our outreach includes bringing in groups. The campus ministry has work days where they'll bring out 60 or 70 students, and we really depend on that to get a lot of the intensive work done at the beginning of the season during planting. And then in the fall, during the freshman week of getting the students ready, we typically get a big work crew of freshmen to come out that have a big role in helping harvest things at that time. So we get hundreds of students out there to get some experience on the garden. The academic elements that I'll briefly address, the departments involved, student research and specific courses, some of the new academic programs we're looking at, and service activities. My two colleagues that have helped most are both in the biology department with me, Dr. Marlene Cross in the middle here, who has been doing the research plot. We also have folks from the art department that are involved. My daughter, the artist, did a Three Sisters sculpture at the garden. And we had another faculty member in the art department, hospitality management, foreign languages and cultures. It's amazing how much you can, in fact, recruit faculty from other departments to kind of share your vision and see how they can utilize it for their work. The workforce course that has probably gotten us the most reach to students is one called Introduction to Sustainability Studies that is populated by 50 to 150 students per year. And the garden and farm are one of the primary work sites for the service hour requirement for that course. The art course is a studio art course called 3D Design. Although the professor has decided to kind of not continue that because it takes too long to get out there. It's a half-hour drive to get to it and back. And if you just have a three-hour studio period, it's almost takes too long for him to get out there. This is one of our Three Sisters gardens last year. The corn grew up to 10 feet tall by the end of the season. And this year, unfortunately, it was attacked by raccoons. They pretty much took out the whole thing in one night. This is the research plot where we're testing the effects of various soil amendments on the soil biology. The other research that we've got going there is some work in entomology, natural predators, crop pests, some organic weed management, perennial polyculture research. This was the very beginning of Dr. Cross's randomized blocks design experiment. You can see our cover crop kind of surrounding the research plot. And she's involved students in her botany and plant propagation classes in doing some of the work. And they've been looking at the development of mycorrhizal fungi and soil bacteria and how these things have changed over the three-year time span of the experiment. She's also had some students doing independent research. This one that was looking at some real-time PCR work to identify nitrogen-fixing bacteria in the research plot. And now she's moving on. She wants to kind of repurpose the experimental garden for some work on garlic, which her husband is a retired window installer and has been growing garlic for years in their garden at home. The other, Dr. Alinsky, has been doing work in his field ecology and entomology classes at the garden. students looking at pests of particular crops that we grow, some casual collecting, some serious collecting, pitfall traps. We've discovered that we've done a good thing in terms of benefiting a wide variety of beneficial insects, a lot of ground beetles, a very diverse population of some of those parasitoid wasps that we found some of those tobacco hornworms just loaded with parasitoid wasps, so that was an exciting moment. The weed management research has been my thing, I guess. We had, Tim and I had a big fight this summer. He had planted onions here and it became overrun with ragweed. I think he tills too much, but I can't tell him that. So the case of the ragweed overrun onion field this summer, he threatened to get Roundup and spray it with Roundup, but I talked him out of it, and instead I divided it up into a gigantic randomized box design experiment, and we tested five different ways to control the ragweed, including two different types of organic herbicides, and that was fun. And I don't like using even organic herbicides. You know, I think they're just like regular herbicides under an organic label. And the burnout is cheaper, and it smells terrible. It smells like clove oil is the active ingredient. And actually, green match worked better. It has a nice, more pleasant smell. It's more of a lemony. It's a citrus active ingredient. And between the two, I go with green match. What it's worth, if you might want to deal with it. But to be honest with you, old-fashioned, just physically uprooting it by hand was the most cost-effective means of controlling ragweed. You know, looking at the expense and the necessary repeated applications of other ways of controlling the weeds, old-fashioned method of just yanking them out by the roots was the most effective and cost-effective way to control ragweed. We had a little plot of barley next to the onion field that was planted on the same day as the onion field. And, of course, the barley was organic barley. I had students that wanted to make beer. And we already had a well-developed hops operation. So we planted barley. And it turns out that the barley was an amazing suppressant for ragweed growth. Also gave us lots and lots of grain. I've been winnowing barley in my office with a fan for the last week. Did an experiment in perennial polyculture. Planted two things together, both perennials, elderberry plus groundnut. If you're not familiar with groundnut, it's the old Indian potato, Apios americana. Had some ragweed problems here too, but once we got the ragweeds out and let the clover have a chance, the elderberry came back. The groundnut though didn't flourish very well, so I'm going to replant again this fall with some more groundnut. These are the tubers. I harvested this about 10 pounds of groundnuts in 15 minutes at a local site that is a great source of. So the beauty of groundnut is the tubers are like potato, and it's a perennial. It's also a legume. So we're hoping that we can get the groundnut established. Academic programs, mainly sustainability-related programs. We don't have a sustainable agriculture program, but we have majors and minors in sustainability studies. A post-bac, we've got lots of community outreach going on with youth and children. Our greatest challenges, the transportation, 25-minute drive, the sustainability in terms of economics thing, we're never going to sell enough produce to cover our costs. So we're going to have tuition-paying students to make the bottom line work. And then figuring out what to do with the rest of the farm. To deal with the first challenge, we've got now an edible forest garden project on campus, a little patch of woods, literally a football field's length away from the parking lot by the science building. In in terms of the academic programs, we've tried a series of organic gardening classes. We've got a horticulture program, a renewable energy technology program. Organic gardening course series was a flop. And if you want to know more about that, I'll be happy to share with you. The renewable energy technology thing is a go. I just found out this week that we got a grant from our sustainability fund to pay for the grid tie, and we've got the local electricians union partnering with us to actually do the installation. And we've got lots of other sustainable industries in the community that I think may partner with us for this. As far as what we do on the farm, when the conventional farmer retires, my current fantasy is that we perhaps consider perennial polyculture as a demonstration. There's a guy in Wisconsin that has a large farm that I want to visit in perennial polyculture. He's planted things and he's kind of letting nature take its course once he's kind of started this farm in the direction he wants to go with. So if any of you want to learn more about that, if you've got a large scale opportunity and want to try something exciting, I'm going to be visiting a whole bunch of places in the Great Lakes region. I'm going to end in Kansas at the Land Institute in Kansas mid-July. I've got more details on this if you want to join me. Of course, that'll be not 2001, but 2012 this summer. So let me know. I can share with you a little brochure I have on this course opportunity.
So we have about 5 minutes for question and answer.
Are you sure?
I enjoyed that immensely, but one thing you said really sparked my interest is that's getting work-study funding for summer labor. Isn't work-study, at least at our school, it's limited to during the semester. How did you manage to get that?
We have work-study money that comes from sources other than traditional work-study, which is sort of government subsidized. The college has its own work-study fund, although they don't pay any more than what the other ones do. It's still minimum wage. And I'm not always happy about it because it does feel like slave labor. Yeah.
Can you address a little bit more how those service learning component works in the course?
Is when you plan your course assignments, I typically have a service hour requirement of anywhere from 8 to 10 hours over the course of the term, and the students are given lots of different things that they can do. Typically, you want to have a service activity relate to the content of the course in some way, so that it's relevant. And, I can't say it's an easy thing to manage. It's just one more thing that you have to try to, account for. And if they do, they get points. And as long as it's certified, for some things, they might have to have the person who was supervising the activity assigned a piece of paper that indicates they did it.
Another question about your funding. You said that you don't think you'll be able to pay for some of the programs out of the farm. Have you thought about looking at grants and going after grant funding for?
We're constantly trying to find grants to support what we're doing. And, the economy has made it more and more difficult to get grant funding. I'm batting about 120 right now. On grants, and it used to be a lot easier. So, we definitely, we're trying to get grant support for what we're doing, but it takes so much time to be writing all those grants.
Are you finding that by having the garden on campus, is that helping to generate more interest and more students want to be a logistics site, or is there some competition for the students who want that kind of experience working with the soil?
This edible forest garden project I just started this fall, and I did it in part because I have a really heavy teaching load, and I can walk 5 minutes to get kids started on a project in the back of the woods. I don't have that half hour to take a handful of students out to the garden. I think it's nice to give students that don't have that big block of time a chance I really wish I had your rate with the farm right there.
It is nice. I'm really impressed with the research piece you've been able to incorporate. And I'm wondering what would have been the complications there. Really neat projects that you've got going. What have been the challenges?
Well, again, the distance. You know, I think Marlene Cross would wish that, that she could just step outside her office to attend. You know, there's a lot of work you have to do when you've got a controlled experiment to make sure that you don't have things happening between the plots that can affect the results. And I mean, this fall, her problem is she planted peppers and green beans as sort of the proxies for how well things grow. And she's got an amazing green thumb. She had, I think, close to 800 pounds of peppers just from that little research plot. So good thing is we were selling, you know, a lot of the stuff that she was producing for her experiment. And the students were eating stuff as they were helping her collect her data.
Where's the money?
The money? It goes right back into the fund that supports the garden and pays him salary. I think. Honest to God, we kind of do things a little loosey-goosey at Mercy Hurst. And I don't even know what our budget is for this year. We were supposed to get it in July, but as of October, I've still not seen my budget. I guess as long as they keep paying for the invoices I submit, we're okay.
Okay, time for one more question.
Yes. Any connection with the what?
Alumni who might be interested in supporting this, or even when they come back on campus to get their hands into the garden.
You know what? I really want to tap into that. I've connected with most of these former students from 25 years ago through Facebook. So I probably ought to just put the word out. You know, if you want to contribute, do it. But that's a good point. We haven't tapped into alums yet.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited.
Oh, that's okay.